And thank you, Deb, for joining us.
Thank you, Karen. It's been great talking with you.
Okay.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from the Mahone Foundation, presenting the 15th Annual Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, Saturday, August 17th, featuring saxophonist Paul Taylor, blues singer Nora Jean Brusso, Natty Nation, and the R&B band Christopher's Project. Also, a Racine Kenosha Firefighters Cook-Off and an Arts and Craft Village. Tickets online at MahoneFund.org. Funding scholarships for economically disadvantaged and academically deserving youth and healthy lifestyle initiatives in communities of color. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Lenny Aquinta for Community Matters, and our topic this morning is Attacking Infant Mortality by Changing the Social Determinants of Health. Now, that's a mouthful, but it's an important topic here in southeastern Wisconsin and across the state and really across the country. But we have some very bad statistics in Kenosha County in particular, and that's why this topic is important to us, and it's important in Racine and Walworth, in Lake County, Illinois, all over. Because this is a national topic, and because there has been some terrific work done by a national organization called the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, headquartered up in Milwaukee, we're going to start by learning why what we're doing in Kenosha and in southeastern Wisconsin is part of a national movement to understand the social determinants of health and to change those social determinants to have better health outcomes for everyone. And our focus right now in Kenosha is youth, and particularly infant mortality and infant success in the first 3 to 5 years. My guests from the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities are Michelle Hinton, the Director of Impact, Population Health, and Well-Being of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, and with her is Barbara Armstrong, the Director of Development of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time this morning. Now, this phrase, social determinants of health, is a little bit daunting, and the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities is a little daunting, too. It's a very long name. Why don't we just begin by telling the audience, Barbara Armstrong, what is the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, and how did it get involved with this project on health and health outcomes?
Thanks, Len, and thanks again for having Michelle and I here today. The Alliance for Strong Families and Communities is a strategic action network of community-based, human-serving organizations from all over our country that are bonded together by a shared vision to achieve a healthy and equitable society. And we do that work by creating the conditions for strong organizational excellence so that together these organizations can address some of the priorities that we've identified together, including population health and well-being, educational success, safety and permanency, and social and economic mobility, all through a lens of equity, diversity, and inclusion, with a special focus on race equity.
Now, who are the members of the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities? A lot of agencies around the country?
Yeah, our members include human-serving agencies doing everything from early childhood education, older adult services, behavioral health, foster care, you name it, anything that helps children, families to live and thrive successfully in their communities, and the Alliance is doing it.
Now, the Alliance does work in research, information dissemination, policy, monitoring legislation on the state and national level as well, if I understand correctly.
That's really true. Yep. Our goal is really to create strong organizations locally, but also to create the conditions in the ecosystem that allow for systems-level change. So While it's terrific if an organization makes a local impact on, say, a child and his or her family, we love it even more when that organization works together in partnership with community to change the whole system so that children and families have the opportunity to thrive long term.
Now, the Alliance membership, then, if I understand correctly, consists of the traditional behavioral science type agencies that do various interventions for and provide human development services, and these are all community-based, not-for-profit organizations. But it also has become merged with the Settlement House movement, which predates the behavioral health agencies by a long shot,
yeah.
And which we're beginning to understand, if I'm correct, have a really important role to play, because the community building aspect of what the Settlement House movement did is really wrapped up mm-hmm. so carefully, and so the tentacles are everywhere in terms of the social determinants of health. Does that make sense? Am I correct in that, Michelle?
Absolutely. I refer to Settlement Houses as the one-stop shop for collective impact. Because, you know, they are engaged, first of all, they're engaged with these neighborhoods and these families and have developed very strong, trusted relationships with people. And so, you know, when you're thinking about trying to, you know, find a way to impact people's lives, you know, you just can't pop into a neighborhood and say, hey, you know, I've got this for you. You know, most of the time you will get turned away. You know, these are organizations who are, you know, settled in the community, you know, who are organizations who folks have become to trust, who have become, you know, generational support systems for people. And they are the poise to be very strong partners in this work moving forward.
And Michelle Hinton, you have a very long title. It's a lot of syllables. Director of Impact, Population Health, and Well-Being. For a layman, what does that mean?
Good question. you know, it's really about me positioning the Alliance across the country to set a vision for a path forward and impacting the lives of community, of families and communities. And that will involve, as you know, medical systems and health has very different elements. There's elements to those things. You know, it's not just medical. There are, you know, factors around beyond medical that impact a person's ability to live in a healthy society and a healthy community. And so our goal is to identify what those elements are and then, create, a strategy moving forward around how we can leverage our members and our network to impact those things in a meaningful way. Also engaging those folks whose lives we impact. So making sure the voice of the neighbor, of those families and those folks who are looking to impact their lives are there and available to speak on their own behalf.
Don't tell me what I need. Let me tell you what I
need. That's right. That's right.
Well, I think you raise a great point, Michelle. I mean, the Alliance has certain values that it follows, and that place-based, which is rooted in our Settlement House movement, mm-hmm. solutions come from the place mm-hmm. where the problem resides, but also very person-centered,
yeah.
right? So we always want to hear the voice of the children and families who are being impacted by the services that an organization may provide.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Kenosha, we have the Kenosha Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, and assiduous listeners to these broadcasts and to the WGTD services will know that there was a big community forum on the Kenosha Life Course Initiative in mid-July. And the Kenosha Life Course Initiative says that it takes a broad view to stress education, housing, childcare, poverty, transportation, jobs, food, nutrition, and the quality of health care in order to have an impact on the gap between black and white infants in terms of premature births, low birth weight, mm-hmm. maternal complications, and other causes of infant mortality. And they want to improve the conditions that impact health for the whole community, but the focus is on this infant mortality problem mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that is rather bad mm-hmm. here in extreme southeastern Wisconsin. Now, This organization was created in 2010, and it continues to work towards these ends, which are wonderful ends. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk, not at the county level now, but we're going to talk about what the Alliance, as a very powerful organization with a lot of research and partners in that research, we're going to talk about what you have found. You have published a report in the past couple of years called The Social Determinants of Health. Barbara, Michelle has given us an overview of what that means. Could you delve a little bit further into how this study came to be, how we came to get this information together at the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, and why this is important? And then we're going to go into the details of the report.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Len, the things that you mentioned that are being considered around infant mortality, things like transportation or food availability, housing, and so forth, those are the social determinants mm-hmm. of health. I hear our CEO, Susan Dreyfus, often refer to them as the social determinants of life, that when these things are amiss, health is impacted. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is something that the Alliance has been studying for quite some time. So we've been part of a partnership with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Nonprofit Finance Fund, and others. We did a literature review that looked at how community-based organizations are working together in partnership with healthcare to address the social determinants of health. And based on that research, we gathered, really there's a need in our country to improve the way community-based organizations and healthcare are working together to address the social determinants. But in doing that work too, we've obviously learned quite a bit about the social determinants and how they impact community-based organizations, families, and children, and also what's going on in the policy world around social determinants. The Alliance has a public policy office based in Washington, D.C. We are in regular contact with our legislators, looking at recent legislation, upcoming bills, how we can be a part of advocating for community-based organizations who want to address the social determinants and improve the lives of families and children. So this issue brief comes out of all of that work and more.
And the other thing I just want to add specifically as it relates to why social determinants is a focus is because, as I mentioned before, making sure, you know, medical care is beyond, you know, the diagnoses. And as you know, in our country, health care is defined as being able to be diagnosed with something. Prevention and early detection work is something that has been, you know, something on the horizon as a result of the Affordable Care Act. So when you think about that legislation passing, it opened the door for us to really explore prevention and early detection. Social determinants is a part of that prevention and early detection work. Because if you think about a person, for example, who may be potentially diagnosed with diabetes, and they go to the emergency room every time they have an episode to get it taken care of. Well, that means that most of the time those folks don't have access to a primary care doctor. And so not having access to a primary care doctor, they go to the emergency room for their care. And meanwhile, they do that because they don't have a job, they don't have access to a job. You know, most of the time they don't have access to transportation. They're focusing on how to make ends meet day to day, and not necessarily caring about that other stuff. So to think about what are those things that are the sending people to the emergency room, because their priorities mean for them, I need to feed my family, I need to find a job, I don't have access to a doctor. This is what I know. So when you think about the priorities for people, those are the things that are priority for people. And so now, you know, social determinants is helping us create a formula to, you know, to help improve those things. So then we can then improve the health outcomes of a particular being.
You mentioned the excessive and unnecessary use of emergency rooms. unnecessary, because if you have a primary care physician and your condition is under control, you don't get to that crisis point, or it's very much less likely that you would get to a crisis point. So correct me if I'm wrong, Barbara, Michelle, it sounds to me like this has an enormous potential impact on health care costs, which we know are higher in this country than in other developed countries in this world. Am I correct in that assumption?
I think that would be a valid assumption to make. You know, one of the phrases that we use a lot at the Alliance is, let's move it upstream. And when we talk about moving things upstream, we mean, just as Michelle was saying, focusing on preventative measures. And the social determinants, addressing those social determinants of health, help us to back things up a little bit so that we can create environments and solutions for healthy living for folks before they ever get to the need to visit the emergency room, etc.
So understanding this and then employing what we've learned then has two major results, if I get this correctly. People are healthier, mm-hmm. and they have better, more enjoyable, mm-hmm. more productive lives, personally and in their work or profession or craft, whatever that trade, whatever that may be. And we save bundles of money.
Exactly.
Because we're doing things in an intelligent way and we're preventing as much illness as possible. Is that basically
That's it? Very mm-hmm. accurate. But the catch-20 about this, is, which is interesting, you know, healthcare is set up for the sick care. So when you think about the realities, you know, and that's the dichotomy of what we're dealing with, is that, you know, while we want to get upstream and we want to, you know, move forward, you know, it's about shifting our healthcare model from sick care, getting diagnosed, because that's how healthcare organizations get paid. You get a diagnosis, you come in with a nosebleed and they can diagnose you with something. They don't get paid in the past. They don't get paid for making sure you're healthy. Honestly. So, you know, what the Affordable Care Act has done is positioned us to create new models to influence health outcomes through impacting social determinants. And that's a great thing, because when you think about the potential for value-based models and value-based care, where organizations are getting incentivized pay for outcomes, that then gives them that incentive to commit to doing, you know, this prevention work. Whereas in the past, it hasn't happened.
And to be fair, if I can interject, there is good social determinants of health work being done by healthcare providers, by managed care organizations. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the things that the Alliance is really poised to do is to partner with healthcare and managed care to create these generative partnerships, so that community-based organizations who have the depth of experience in working with communities, with families and individuals, have that expertise, can bring that to the table. So that's something that I think we offer.
Mm-hmm. My guest this morning on Community Matters, as we discuss the Kenosha County Life Initiative for improving infant mortality, are from the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities, headquartered up in Milwaukee. Barbara Armstrong, the Director of Development, and Michelle Hinton, the Director of Impact, Population Health, and Well-Being. Let's move on now to talk into a little bit more detail, please, about these social determinants of health, so that our listeners can understand how this all fits into the broader picture. I want our listeners in Southeast Wisconsin to know that this infant mortality initiative is really evidence-based, that the Kenosha Life Course Initiative is really essential to making progress, and it's part of a national movement that has many, many features, and there are many, many social determinants of health. And there's a wonderful brief, an issue brief, that Ms. Armstrong referenced, and if you go to the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities website, which is alliance1.org, and search for social determinants of health issues or issue brief, you'll come up with this. It's public. Let's go into this. Let's begin with you, Michelle Hinton. There's a chart at the top of that issue brief that I wish you could see, but our listeners aren't on TV, unfortunately. But we're going to talk about it because the social determinants of health has revolving around it things like economic stability, neighborhood and physical environment, education, food, community, and social context, and the healthcare system. And each one of those major topics has descriptive subtopics underneath it. So let's just go through those very quickly, the three of us, so that we can talk about all these factors that one must consider when we're talking about a healthy population. Mm-hmm. Michelle?
Mm-hmm. Sure, and I want to, you know, be able to use as an example, you know, birth outcomes or, you know, infant mortality. So you think about, you know, the work that the Life Course Initiative is doing and wanting to improve the outcomes, the health outcomes of families and birth outcomes. You think about, you know, people who come in, you know, go home with a newborn baby and may not have access to a bed for a baby. And might not have access to, you know, understanding how to feed a child. They are struggling day to day to survive. And so you have babies who might wind up sleeping in a bed with a parent. You know, you look at, you know, those economic conditions that that family is in and see that, you know, a family isn't intentionally, you know, wanting to have a baby in the bed, you know, with them, but might not have access to a job or might not have access to resources where they can buy a baby bed or get formula. And so, you know, those are, you know, issues from an economic perspective that impact a person's ability to, you know, ensure that that child has the resources and tools to live a longstanding life. And so that is an example of, you know, economic stability is an example of, you know, why, us ensuring that we need to make sure in a neighborhood or a family that we look at people where they are and attempt to help meet those needs where they are. The other piece we have to remember that it's not just that home, but beyond their home, you know, it's their community. You know, it's those community, the social context in which they live. So while even if a person in their house might finally get a job, you know, there might not be a grocery store in their community. There might be high crime in that community. And so those things create, you know, some insecurity, you know, issues around safety and security for families. And those things have to be addressed as well. And that is why it's so important for, you know, community organizations like settlement houses, who are there, like I said, who are trusted partners or trusted folks in those communities that work with families to help build that. Because you have to build not just that family, but the surroundings of that family.
Just so that we remember, we haven't talked about this statistic on the program for a while, but the disparity in terms of black-white disparities in infant mortality are pretty amazing. Data has shown that the mortality rate for African-American mothers in Wisconsin is almost three times as that for white mothers, mm-hmm. which is totally unacceptable mm-hmm. and ought to be shocking to people. Between 2013 and 2015, Wisconsin had the highest infant mortality rate in the country for infants born to non-Hispanic black women. Mm-hmm. That is not acceptable. Barbara, we want to continue with some of the other social determinants of health that have been identified?
Sure. You know, I think Michelle addressed well the social determinants that can affect individuals and families as well as the community. Two things that we haven't really talked about that I've heard Michelle talk about in the past as being so critical and that we address here at the Alliance are both poverty and race inequity. Mm-hmm. And those systems that really confront families in our state, but frankly all across our nation. Until we address issues of poverty and social and economic mobility, which here at the Alliance we know aligns with educational opportunity, it aligns with health, It aligns with community opportunity, workforce development, and so forth. So until we address poverty, and frankly, until we address systems of racial inequity, we will continue to see social determinants disproportionately affect communities of color, and particularly African-American communities. Michelle?
I wholeheartedly agree. When you think about, for example, families, you just talked about, you know, those statistics related to black women and white women who are birthing children. You know, lots of times there's not access to prenatal care. There's not access to primary care, because typically primary care isn't in African American communities. Most of those places where primary care is done is outside of the community. So typically people have to go find transportation and get either bused to access to that care or not receive it at all.
They're building new hospitals all around me, but none of them are in the center city.
Absolutely.
I can assure you of that.
Well, and we talked too about the ability to get off of work. So
yeah.
If you are a working mother, but you don't have a job that gives you the flexibility or the time off to get the prenatal care that you may need, which we know is an indicator of how healthy
Absolutely.
That child is going to be, if they're going to be born at full term and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the indicators as well.
Absolutely.
Michelle, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, you're right. You're spot on. And, you know, when you think about, again, I go back to these trusted opportunities and across this country, settlement houses, human service organizations who are in those communities, how could those be leveraged, you know, in healthcare to, again, provide access and then do some education, do some health education, do some prevention and early detection education. If there's issues, you know, what you're looking at case management, you're working with people who might have other needs, how do we, you know, across the country build a network of support, you know, to support families where they are? And there is no prescription for that. We have to be careful about medicalizing this work because it's the human element of this thing that we have to understand. Writing a prescription, you know, is something that doctors do. But, you know, understanding a person where they are and meeting them where they are and leveraging those resources at these community-based organizations, I think, is going to be absolutely critical for this work to continue in our country today.
One of the items that's mentioned in the social determinants research papers that the Alliance has published talks about racism and stress.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you would talk about that a little bit for us and what we mean by that.
It's interesting how, for so long in our country we've talked about racism, but there is toxic stress related to it. As a person of color, you know, everyday life, there's this innate stress that occurs just by being a person of color every day. And it actually impacts people's mental health some days. It impacts people's health overall. And, you know, because people don't understand it, you know, it's a natural tendency to, you know, to say that that's an excuse. But I'm really excited that the Alliance is working in that space to help people understand implicit bias and how it impacts people's livelihoods when they are being, you know, discriminated against.
Well, and two, the Alliance has a special focus on the neurosciences,
mm-hmm.
and everything that we've learned about toxic stress, trauma, ACEs, and helping community-based organizations to really align everything that they do, their practices, policies, and programs, through a lens of the latest in the neuroscience. We use something called the core story of the brain to help organizations understand what's going on with the brain, what happens when we experience toxic stress, trauma. This is evidence-based scientific
mm-hmm.
work
mm-hmm.
that's new and that organizations can better understand to help families and children be healthier and to thrive.
When you speak of ACE, ACE, you're talking about adverse childhood experiences as another kind of toxic stress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in speaking with other providers, I've been told that there's very good research that shows that this kind of stress on the mother caused by bias, outright racism, and the effects of racism in terms of poverty, employment, and what have you, have an adverse effect on the child in utero.
Absolutely.
Which is not unusually surprising, mm-hmm. but I think a lot of people would not believe that unless they were presented with the evidence. But that's so, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Now, other forms of social determinants we've talked about also include education, but we haven't spoken especially about literacy. But with many populations in a diverse state like Wisconsin, and particularly in southeast Wisconsin and the entire Milwaukee megalopolis, we've got lots of languages spoken here, and that is another stressor. Any observations with respect to education or with respect to language particularly that you'd like to offer?
For language, for me, you know, having worked in healthcare environments and experienced how a patient or a family from a different ethnic background can come in and culturally stressed, because culturally, you know, the way things happen, you know, it impact, you know, if their issues aren't addressed culturally, it creates this very nervous culture for people. And so if there's language barriers, and we are talking in English and don't have folks who are translators that can help people feel comfortable about what they are about to experience, it creates extra stress for families and folks. And I've seen it, and you know, as medical providers, I see they continue to do a much better job at that. But you know, the other piece of that is that we have to also, from a from an intervention perspective, also do prevention and education, health education that is in different languages and provides opportunity for folks to receive things at their comfort level. It's something that I see that's occurring, which is really great news. We have a long way to go because, like you said, there's tons of languages here, and I'm sure we can't get them all. But, you know, to see, you know, healthcare and community working together at that is really exciting to see.
Your Alliance report emphasizes that there are many conditions besides infant mortality issues that are affected by social determinants and environmental determinants, and some of them are big expensive things mm-hmm. That affect a lot of people: asthma, mm-hmm. hypertension, yep. diabetes, heart disease. So this is a very broad, mm-hmm. broad topic. One of the most fascinating things that I learned that really surprised me, although it seemed obvious once I learned it, but not so obvious until, is what the impact is of these social determinants. And the Alliance has put together a very interesting chart about, and it says only 20% of the health outcomes are determined by access to health care, mm-hmm. access or quality. And what we right. normally talk about is, all we talk about mm-hmm. normally is access and quality, and that's not 100% all across the country mm-hmm. or all across our area. We know that, but that's only 20%, so how can that be? What's the rest, Barbara?
Well, I mean, think about it, Len. So mom is with child and does have access to that early maternal checkups, maybe even all the way through pregnancy. But think of all the other things that impacts that mom and the health of her soon-to-be-born child. You know, it's about 20% with that face-to-face doctor. But, you know, does she have the income to take care of herself, to live in a healthy home? Does she have the education to understand what the doctor is suggesting? Does she have good health behaviors, diet, exercise, tobacco use, alcohol use, mm-hmm. her own behaviors? And is she getting the education around those behaviors to help her make the right choices? Is her physical environment, the quality of her, as Michelle pointed out earlier, the quality of her home, but also the quality of her community. Mm-hmm. Does she have access to food, mm-hmm. transportation, a healthy, safe environment? Is she free from toxic stress? All of those things happen outside of the sitting down and mm-hmm. greeting her physician and getting that medical appointment.
And this isn't really, when you think about it in terms of the history of the country, this isn't really all that weird. We have a history of in the United States of America of improving social factors in terms of having health. In the past last half of the 20th century, for example, we saw a focus on clinical and non-clinical preventive strategies, childhood immunizations. Mm-hmm. My parents and grandparents didn't have that. Smoking cessation mm-hmm. programs, we never heard of those things in the 1940s. Healthy eating and exercise, those are all things that have made a difference. So this isn't all that odd, but we have now a much deeper and fuller understanding because of the extremely amount of great research that's been done by universities, colleges, independent organizations, healthcare organizations, some of it sponsored by the federal government. What would be your wish in terms of people understanding these social factors? How much work do we need to be doing to communicate this? Are we now more in an area where talking to policymakers is just as important as talking to individuals and behavioral and settlement type neighborhood agencies, Michelle?
Absolutely, it is. And I would say that the bottom line is now it's about following the money. It's about not just investing in the diagnoses and treatment of disease, but now preventing that. And investing dollars to support impacting social determinants. And that means investing dollars beyond a medical facility, investing dollars in a community-based organization to make sure that they are at capacity and resource to help support the development of those communities. And so, when you think about, smoking cessation programs, healthy lifestyles, all those things were not necessarily focused on from a payer perspective. So those things have been in the history philanthropic in nature, where people would say, okay, those are some good things to do. And so let's help people do that. But it wasn't necessarily that's what people need to stay alive. And when you're talking about following the money, our legislators, our policymakers need to now start investing some of those dollars that they put on, on chronic disease management and all those things to, reallocating some of those resources to make sure upstream, as Barb mentioned, that we get ahead of some of those things. And I think that's the important piece. It's so interesting, Lynn, I've worked in communities for many, many years. I've done prevention and early detection work. I've done health fairs with families, healthy cooking demonstrations with families, exercise activities with families, and they are just so excited about being there and doing it. People want to be healthy. People have this interest in wanting to be healthy. Some people are nervous that they don't know that they can actually get healthy. And so it's just so important for our leaders and stakeholders to invest in that. And I think that's the piece that we really want to see happening. And how then, too, we partner across the country, how we partner as stakeholders. So often, people identify a problem and try to figure out how to solve it themselves in organizations. There's so many vast resources across the country. The great thing about the Alliance is that we have a core group of members who are willing to partner, not just with healthcare, but with each other, and figure this thing out. Because at the end of the day, the money doesn't last always. We all have a certain amount of resources. How do we begin to leverage those resources together to solve? And that's what's going to be key.
One of the things that the Kenosha Life Course Initiative has pointed out, and they've published a rather nice booklet in conjunction with the health forum that they had on July 18th, is they talk about health equity. Mm-hmm. And they define health equity is that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And they distinguish that from health equality, which I think is, it's not just a play on words here. We're not equity, equality, we're not playing games here with words. They say it's different in the sense that health equity works to avoid unfair or remediable, correctable differences among groups of people, whether those groups are defined socially, economically, demographically, geographically, or some other kind of stratification. How does that resonate with the work that you're doing?
It's very in sync with what we are trying to do. And health equity, we look at, you know, we view things through the lens of health equity because we want to make sure that we're removing those barriers to access to equity for everyone. You know, and there typically there are folks who have a more advantage of those of than others and getting access to resources. And so we want to make sure that, you know, as we do this work, that we make sure that we create a level playing field for everyone.
So this makes perfect sense.
Absolutely, it does.
One of the interesting things in that issues booklet I just referenced is that new research has discovered that exposure to trauma, and we were talking about that in terms of the mother, we were discussing that earlier, stress on the mother, for example. Exposure to trauma can lead to a change in your DNA, which can be passed down to future generations, which is just mind-blowing when you think of its significance and impact, and we'll be learning more through further research, I'm sure. Barbara, I'd like to use this opportunity to also let our listeners know that the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities does some other work besides this. You do policy research, you do demonstration projects, you re-grant from major foundations to pilot programs to improve the healthy development of people in their communities. But you also provide operation support services now to members, and I don't think you even have to be a member to buy into those operation support services if you're a community-based human services development organization. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, let me just say that our operation support services program grew out of a research project that we did in partnership with the Oliver Wyman Management Consulting Firm and the American Public Human Services Association to really take a look at the financial health of the human services nonprofit sector. And what we learned is that the nonprofit sector, and particularly in human services, is really struggling financially. You have a preponderance of organizations, a majority of organizations, that you know, are so much closer to insolvency than any of us ever guessed. And so this report helped us to identify the challenges that those organizations, our organizations, are facing, and then also to provide five North Stars, or ways that those organizations can improve to be more financially successful.
And this applied to organizations coast to coast, border to border, regardless of size.
Yeah, we did, yes. So thousands of 990s were reviewed to better understand the financial health of the sector. And the 990, by the way, Len, is a federal government tax return report that helps to, that delineates the financial health of every nonprofit organization in this country of a size. At any rate, this report, one of the things that it suggested was that organizations try new practices to support their financial health. And so the Alliance started the Operation Support Services Program to allow organizations to sort of offload those things that are not necessarily the heart of their mission. So things like human resources, finances, IT, and so forth. The Alliance provides these services at a fee to organizations. We literally run those operations for them so that organizations can focus more effectively on their mission and program.
Well, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And people can learn more about that by visiting the website. Now, there are ways to learn more, and before I forget, let me share those ways with our listeners. The Kenosha Life Course Initiative has a new website, and I'm going to read this, http://bit.ly/klihf. And repeat that, http://bit.ly/KLIHF.